Senator Sertich, would you like to approve the minutes from last week? All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. This morning we start out with Commissioner Marks. Welcome to the committee. And we're going to talk about the supportive housing bonding proposal. Welcome to the committee.
Morning, Mr. Chair.
I don't think we got a house file yet, but we all are doing that. I want everyone to know that we will pass out ranking sheets, hopefully tomorrow. I apologize for not having them, so you can keep track and how you want to rank all the various bonding proposals. And we will have to evaluate them at the end of all the hearings. So go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Tim Marks. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and I'm pleased here to be before the committee today. What I'm here to do today is to testify briefly and provide information to the committee about the governor's proposal to have $20 million allocated to permanent supportive housing through the Housing Finance Agency as part of his capital bonding proposal. Just a little bit of background on use of general fund dollars and general fund bonding for permanent supportive housing and other housing proposals. Since 1990, there has been about $23.7 million allocated from general fund dollars to our program that does housing for very low-income people through our housing trust fund and other programs. And in 1998 and 2000, the legislature started the precedent of using the capital budget for this purpose. In 1998, $4 million was allocated. In 2000, $2 million was allocated as a part of the capital budget. And in 2002, $16.2 million was allocated as a part of the capital budget. Altogether, this has produced about 423 units of housing throughout the state. In various corners of the state, actually throughout the state, through this general fund process. And we've been able to leverage federal dollars, philanthropic dollars, and local government dollars with this funds to produce these units. It is really as a result of this experience in looking at the needs of our very, very low-income individuals and our homeless individuals that in 2003 led the governor to ask the legislature to pass legislation, which was adopted, that established a working group on long-term homelessness. There is in your packet, I believe, a short piece of information that we have prepared that summarizes our proposal. But the legislation that you passed established a working group on long-term homelessness, which is a broadly representative group of foundations, local governments, service providers. It is chaired by Commissioners Goodnow, Fabian, and myself, who were charged with coming up with a plan on the long-term homelessness issue. The long-term homeless are a subset of our broader homeless population who are constantly on the streets, persistently homeless for a year or more, or who have several episodes of homeless over a period of time. And our proposal is to use this $20 million as a lead strategic investment to continue the effort to address the long-term homeless population. The needs of the homeless population. What we will be doing early next month is submitting to you a fuller and more comprehensive business plan that will further the governor's goal of ending long-term homelessness in Minnesota by 2010. And that's about 5,000 people and about 3,000 households right now, and our business plan is going to be looking at those numbers and providing a more comprehensive approach to addressing that issue. The $20 million that we are looking at here will produce between 260 and 530 units, depending upon the mix of new construction, acquisition and rehabilitation, and how much we're able to leverage other sources. And because of the significance of what we are trying to do, the governor made the decision, and we advocate the legislature supporting that decision, because this $20 million is a strong signal that the state is providing leadership on this issue that will signal to our philanthropic community, our nonprofits, the federal government, and others that the state is serious about addressing this goal. these funds, this $20 million and all the other funds that we will be allocating to this proposal, we'll be getting more details to you on later, will be allocated through a competitive process. It is intended to be allocated throughout the state to address the needs of the long-term homeless, both through our existing mechanism of allocating funds through our super RFP, request for proposal process, and also on a pipeline process. We have learned very much now in Minnesota about how to do good permanent supportive housing, and we want to build on those efforts now with this $20 million and going forward the next several years to really build upon that and really tackle this problem. It is permanent supportive housing is a method of housing. I know many of you have seen developments in your districts and elsewhere throughout the state where the long-term homeless, many of whom have mental health problems, chemical dependency problems, and other disabilities, in order to be successfully housed, need support services. And so what we are doing is getting them into permanent housing and providing them the support services so they can be successfully housed over the long term. So a key piece of what we'll be presenting to you later is how to make sure that the services are integrated into the housing so that they can, these people can be housed successfully over the long term. That is a summary of the proposal before you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair and committee members. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, I want to remind members that this is just an informational hearing, that when the bill is introduced, we'll be voting on it and hearing it again. So this should help the process later. I know in our tour that we had last year, we didn't visit supportive housing. And I think this is a needed thing. Any questions?
Here.
Representative Mahoney.
You know, you brought up the tour we took last year, and trying to remember, that tour was pretty much concentrated on Minneapolis and St. Paul, wasn't it? We didn't get out into any suburbs.
Pretty hard for us to tour too far out.
Well, you know, I was just running some numbers here, and most of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency's assistance goes to St. Paul and Minneapolis. So, just rough numbers that I was doing, with numbers provided by them here. They do about almost 21,000 in the metro area. They do 21,000 supportive housing initiatives, I mean, in terms of units.
Mm-hmm.
And approximately 12,500 of them are in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I'm just wondering why there's no focus on the suburban areas where people continuously tell me that they have jobs and nobody to take those jobs out there. Can you expand on that at all? Why are we putting more than 50 or 60% of our affordable housing initiatives into the cities? I mean, my district's got about 30 or 40% of Ramsey County's affordable housing. Can you explain to me why I should try to get more into my district?
Mr. Marks.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, through the process that this working group has developed, we have recognized that in order to meet the needs of the long-term homeless, we need to be very diligent in providing opportunities throughout the region and throughout the state. And so we will be working to address that issue so that the long-term homeless have opportunities throughout the region and throughout the state. The reason that there are many projects in the core cities is that is where many of the long-term homeless and others reside. That is where many services are. That is where many jobs are. And it is important, we think, as we make efforts to disperse that, to make this an opportunity throughout the state and the region, to also recognize that this is where the individuals are, and it is appropriate to house them where they are, as well as to provide opportunities throughout the region. These developments, it's very important to do good quality developments, and many of which in your area and throughout the cities in the region are good quality developments that help people turn around their lives and actually can help stabilize communities as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Maybe you can explain why out of 20,000, Carver County's only got 240 units that you put out there. Scott County has 165. Washington County has 300. But yet, Hennepin County's got over 10,000. Ramsey County's got over 6,300. I mean, it just seems that you're saying that there isn't any problem any place other than Hennepin or Ramsey County, or those counties aren't actually addressing the particular issues themselves and aren't bringing the proposals to you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney,
Commissioner.
We are responsive to the needs and to the proposals that communities send to us. We do the financing, and we respond for proposals that are submitted to us. And so we don't discriminate against a proposal from Carver County or Hennepin County or Ramsey County. We finance and try to make happen the best proposals that are presented to us. And the issue of making affordable housing more dispersed throughout the region and throughout the state is an important one. It's one which we must address, but we want to do it in a way that still moves good projects forward where they come up.
Mr. Chairman Mahoney.
Well, Commissioner Marks, it looks like we've truly been investing and investing well in the Hennepin and Ramsey County areas. I'm just wondering, wouldn't this $20 million be better served by maybe dispersing it out to the counties outside of the metro area, metro counties outside of Ramsey and Hennepin? It seems that, there's just some counties that just don't have any want to put this kind of housing in their particular areas. And I'm just wondering, maybe we should just put some caveats on this $20 million.
Representative Mahoney, I have a feeling that the reason they're there is because that's where the greatest need was. I think we can have Ms. Callahan or Mr. Dahl come up and maybe help address that. I think supportive housing is traditionally gone to where the greatest need is and where it's most affordable makes most sense, like the Commissioner said. Carver County, I know it cost probably more than it cost to build supportive housing just for the lot. The definition of affordable housing in Carver County is a lot different than affordable housing in Fairmont, Minnesota. And I have a feeling in a rural setting, the costs are so much less than it is here that it's really not an issue. A lot of families take their relatives in and help them with housing. My brother got back from Vietnam. I went and bought him a house. And this is the kind of way we do things out in the rural area.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't really disagree with that idea. I think it's a wonderful idea.
I know in your family you do that.
I think there's many families in Hennepin and Ramsey County. I'm just saying that, Mr. Chair, that it just seems it's a glaring example of state policy targeting a particular area. And you're telling me, you're trying to make the argument here that there aren't any affordable housing needs out in Scott County or Carver County or Washington County. They're all in Hennepin and Ramsey County. Mm-hmm. I have a list of the counties and the municipalities in Hennepin County. And once you get down that particular road, it becomes even more glaring.
Mm-hmm.
Minneapolis has 7,000 units of affordable housing.
Affordable housing and supportive housing are two different things.
Right, and I have not gotten the entire list, nor been able to spend the time to go over and do the numbers. We have all had staff cuts both sides of the aisle, and have to do some of this myself. But it certainly seems to lead down a path that shows that it seems to be a policy that we're putting a lot more money and a lot more affordable housing into the urban areas rather than the suburban areas.
Are you thinking we're creating the need there?
Oh, the chicken or the egg, it's always a question.
Okay. Commissioner.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. I think the numbers that you are referring to are probably the overall numbers for all of the assistance that the Housing Finance Agency provides throughout the state. What we're talking here is a relatively small portion of the assistance that we provide. In fact, we've only done about 423 supportive housing units that have been dispersed throughout the state. We can give you better numbers about where they are throughout the state, but this is a relatively minor portion of the affordable housing that we provide. And if you look at our broad numbers, and I think the numbers that you're referring to, they are dispersed pretty broadly throughout the state and throughout the region. And in addition to that, it's important to look at what those counties and what those individual cities do on their own, perhaps without state assistance. I will not take away from you the issue that we could do a better job, the state could, at making sure that we have more affordable housing opportunities throughout the state for everyone.
Well, Mr. Chair,
and Mahoney.
Commissioner Marks, in our tour of, I think it was Crestview was the name last year.
Is that what it was?
I think it was Crestview.
Okay.
It became readily obvious without being said that these were single mothers with children. And that's the kind of supportive housing we're talking about here. So for you to come to this committee and say that there's no need for supportive housing for single mothers with children in Carver, Scott, Washington, Beltrami, St. Louis, you name the county, it's going out on a limb.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I did not say, and I want to clarify the record, that there is no need in Carver County or in other parts of the region. What I am saying is that we will respond to the need wherever that need arises and try to work with the communities and try to work with nonprofit providers to meet those needs.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Mahoney,
you said in your remarks that you respond to what the county asks for and the process, the applications that the counties bring to you. It's pretty obvious. It's almost it's an obvious hole that I could drive a tractor trailer through. And I can't drive a tractor trailer.
Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, it is not only counties who bring proposals to us. It is cities, it is nonprofit providers like Catholic Charities, the Wilder Foundation, and other organizations who bring proposals to us. And if a nonprofit provider brings us to a proposal, we try to work with that nonprofit provider and go through the local approval process. So the counties, obviously, and the city play a very key role in this. And there is no doubt that there is, on occasion, strong resistance to affordable housing projects. We have to work through those issues, and we are very diligent in trying to do that, and it's not easy. And when we do good projects like Crestview in your area and other ones, we have success then in working with other communities to successfully site them.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
I'd sure like the list of the counties and the number of applications that these counties or these nonprofits have brought to you in counties outside of Ramsey and Hennepin, or for that matter, outside of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I don't have any problem. I work very hard for people who have housing needs in my district and at a state level, and I think my record is very clear. But I am totally tired of the metro area, and particularly St. Paul, feeling like the suburbs and the outstate counties are dumping their problems into my into my city. And this has to come back to a vote. I certainly expect to have a whole lot more to say when it comes back to the committee for a vote, not only here, but in the bonding committee. And I certainly hope that you, as the Minnesota Housing Agency, will address that issue before it gets back to the bonding committee.
Representative Mahoney, I'll get you that list. And Representative Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to be clear that I understand what I thought we were talking about long-term permanent supportive housing, not the broader issue of affordable housing. Because it's clear that Representative Mahoney has concerns about a much broader issue, a much larger issue. We could talk probably to eternity about affordable housing, the euphemism for low-income housing, but this is about, there's a continuum of housing that those folks in the world that work with this, there's the transitional housing, there's short-term stuff, and all sorts of different things. This particular proposal here, if I'm not mistaken, is focusing on, as the commissioner said, the tip of the spear, the most pressing problem, the most critical need, the most immediate need right now. And I believe, I just want to make sure that this is what we're focusing on and not the overarching, larger, affordable housing issue that is a constant battle between suburbs, cities, rural Minnesota, everything else, but that we're focusing on, as you said, a narrow segment of where the shoe pinches the most right now. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, instead of Gerlach, you're absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a few questions that I think are going to get at what Representative Gerlach was talking about, where the need is most. When I look at the proposal, I look at the second bullet point, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, and it talks about we're gonna focus on those who have been homeless for more than 12 months or have had four more episodes of homelessness in the last 3 years. In the second part of that, four more episodes of homelessness, can you explain what exactly is that? Is that somebody who had to go to emergency shelter, or what would constitute four episodes?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sertich, being homeless is being without a permanent place to live in a shelter that is habitable. And so as we review proposals and have expectations for the providers that will do this, we will work with them to have applicants for these permanent supportive housing positions interview and understand the individual situations. And so lacking a permanent housing could be in a shelter, could be on the streets, it could be having to be doubled up for a long period of time with a relative. So it's being without a permanent place of shelter. And we're going to have to do this in a very kind of common sense and flexible way in working with people. But the expectation here is that we are going to try to serve those that have been persistently homeless and are kind of the hardest to serve. We lift them up off the streets and get them out of the position where they're consuming a lot of crisis services and can help turn their lives around.
Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I might broaden this out just a little bit, but it's only the intention to get at the heart of this. Representative Gerlach stated, and then you agreed, Commissioner, that our most pressing problem is this sort of long-term homelessness and housing. My concerns are a little more broad than that. I see a different crisis as well that I think is at least equal to and maybe almost more important is the emergency shelter issue. That we restored some of the funding that's still cut. I had spoken with our county folks up in St. Louis County, and over the last quarter, they had to turn away from emergency shelters 160 people, and about a quarter of them, over 40, were children. And in the same period in a previous year, it's usually about 10 or 12 people. So you're looking at, you know, 10 times as many people being turned away at this time.
What was the temperature?
And temperature is very cold, very cold. And you and 160 compared to 10 people over a quarter of a year is a huge jump. And I would contest that the six-year plan of long-term homelessness is very important, but at the same time, what are we doing to address those issues of this immediate problem that's happening?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sertich, one of the benefits of providing permanent supportive housing for individuals who would otherwise be in shelters is that we will free up, hopefully, shelter space that would be there for those that need it for a temporary crisis in their lives that they can then turn around. So the permanent housing will help with the crisis shelter situation. As to the overall crisis shelter situation, that is something that the Housing Finance Agency does not generally deal with. But I think local communities and our Department of Human Services need to monitor that very closely and make sure that there is the space necessary. But what we want to do with this effort is look at a long-term solution that will provide permanent housing for those that would otherwise be in the position of having to use shelters.
Yeah. Representative Sertich.
Well, Mr. Chair, and this might be a little broad, but do you folks compile the numbers as far as emergency shelters and how many folks are being served?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sertich, I believe the Department of Human Services and individual counties provide that information, and I don't have that right here at my disposal.
Okay.
Representative Sertich.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I think this is a part of our committee where the buck gets passed around, and I'm not blaming you on this, Commissioner. It's just this issue is so broad that Commissioner Goodenow is involved in it and Fabian, and we haven't even talked about Deed and folks because an issue besides the mental illnesses and chemical dependency problems aren't really addressed in this committee, but also I think these folks that are can't find affordable housing or long-term homelessness, also jobs and employment is involved in it, and we haven't even talked about how DEED would intersect with solving homelessness and finding jobs. Is there a way we can, and I don't know how we get at finding these numbers from the county or from HHS or wherever they're at, is there a way we can find out where these numbers are? We fund the emergency shelters, but if we can't hold it accountable as what the numbers are, I'd like to find a way where we could do that.
Are you saying you want to know what other departments spend on this population?
Not even Mr. Try. I'd like to know what the numbers are out there.
The numbers
I found out what's happening in Hibbing and Virginia. My sense is, the way the economy is, this is happening in other areas, and we hold the purse strings to the emergency shelters.
Well, certainly the next person that asked to talk is Representative Dorn, and I know for a fact that we have shelters in Mankato. We don't have official shelters, I don't believe, in the city I live in. Mm-hmm. But I know in Mankato we do. And if you're finished, we'll have Representative Dorn.
Well, we can go around the table and we're going to get a snapshot, but I'm wondering if we have a statewide numbers.
Commissioner, can you get us any documentation of what the need is for this various forms of housing and shelters and how much we're lacking? I know we'll have Mr. Dahl, we can probably ask to come down here. I'm sure he's got it right on the tip of his tongue, what the need for homeless shelters are. He's certainly expressed that in my office several times.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we'd be glad to work with Mr. Dahl and others in the Department of Human Services to make sure the committee has that information. One additional point, however, is that a significant portion of the plan that we will be presenting is to provide rental assistance to individuals who are without permanent shelter. That is so that they can use the private market to get themselves in to an apartment, and we're hitting the market right now at a good time where vacancies are relatively high, and so part of the plan will be to provide that rental assistance and then the support services to work with the landlords so that these individuals can be successful tenants.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Dorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and actually my line of questioning is really parallel to what Representative Sertich was asking about, because I do think it is vital if we're talking about addressing the need to end homelessness, we have to try to get our minds around just what the need is. I attended a meeting last Saturday in Mankato on this issue, and I know you were scheduled and had an emergency that you didn't want to have in order and couldn't make it. But and I appreciate the fact that someone from your office, your agency, was there. And the testimony, though, of other folks, kind of reflects some of the concerns and questions that Representative Sertich brought up in terms of the increased load on the Salvation Army person shared kind of, what they're dealing with that is, I don't have the numbers in front of me, that's larger than what they used to deal with. The Blue Earth County Social Services, a social worker was there, different folks. And I think it is important that we try to get a sense of what even to get an understanding of what the need is near as we can tell right now versus what the ripple effects are of things we've changed recently that don't show up yet. In fact, one of my questions was even on the need right now. I think you referenced 5,000 people, 3,000 households, and my recollection is that the number that I was using was one from the Wilder survey in 2001, where they talk about 4,000 households.
Yeah.
And so even there, 3,000 households or 4,000 households would show that we're not even sure right now about the number, and that was in 2001. So how do we know if we are growing a population of who will be chronically homeless on one end while we're trying to deal with it on the other end in this committee? And I think we need that information. I think this committee has talked about that before, that our
our budget turf intersects so much with what is going on, decisions made elsewhere, that we just have trouble getting around. So I see you might have some response to that.
Yeah. Commissioner.
Chair Dunker, Representative Dorn, the information that I provided to you is based on the 2000 Wilder survey. So as a part of our working group process, they looked at their 2000 survey and provided an estimate to us of what they estimate the long-term homeless population to be as of 2000. Mm-hmm. Now, they didn't use the same definition in 2000 as our working group is, so it's a little bit imprecise, but they did estimate 5,000 individuals in about 3,000 households. The Wilder Foundation just did a new survey last October, and we'll be getting the results of that shortly. We have been consulting with them for the purposes of constructing this plan, and based upon that, we have come up with a number that over the 7-year period, we should be attempting to serve 4,000 new households over this period, which will accommodate some growth in the long-term homeless population, but also will be serving some. So we think 4,000 is a good number for our planning purposes, and the Wilder Foundation will be coming out with its final, more definitive numbers later this month or early next month, and we're closely working with them to make sure that we're integrating that information into our report. But what I can report is that our plan is constructed based upon the survey information provided by the Wilder Foundation.
And Representative Dorn. Mr. Chair, the one area that I don't know how we even estimate is that whole area of how much is happening just family within family kinds of help that you mentioned, the doubling up, mm-hmm. or if you've got a house for your brother, help your brother. I don't know how anybody can survey and find out what's going on, and if that's one of the criteria that counts, you know, we could have many more than we're even able to estimate who would be eligible, and that's a piece of it that I'd like to know how they do it, but I certainly couldn't sit here and tell them how they should do it, because I don't know how you can get it all. You know, what tools they have to get at that kind of information in terms of what's going on.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Dorn, the Wilder Foundation has a rather, they've been doing this now since about 1991, every 3 years, and they have a rather sophisticated methodology to get just at those issues, and I expect the committee may want to hear from the Wilder Foundation directly as this process mm-hmm. unfolds, because they will tell you how they get to the doubled up number and that type of thing. And again, what we're focusing on here is the long-term or chronically homeless population, and those that are doubled up will sometimes be in that category, but often not. It's a lot of times a temporary situation.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, since we, the other question I don't have a lot in front of me to look at. You talk about what you're going to finance. Is this a loan process where you're loaning money, and then what kind of repayment is there on the loan, or how
Mr.
does
Marks.
It work?
Hey, Mr. Chair, Representative Dorn, what these are, these are generally 20-year loans, and the way they're the reason they are structured as loans is that we can enforce various requirements related to the population that they are serving and the income requirements, but generally the money is not repaid back. It becomes a forgivable loan. So it turns into a grant basically after 20 years for the general fund portion of the money. The general fund pays the interest back, but we structure it as a loan so that we have the ability to enforce obligations on the providers.
Any other? Representative Linder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking at your second bullet here also, and appreciate what you're doing, and we've got to address this problem, but you have part of the business plan is to end, kind of have a problem with that, to end long-term homelessness by 2010. I think it would be better said just to address it. I don't think we will end it. I think back at President Lyndon Johnson back in the mid-60s wanting to end poverty and declared the war on poverty, and 40 years later, $5 trillion have been spent, and we still have more poverty, you know, than we had then. And it seems like the more we put into things like this, the more we have, because we're, you know, we can't just say, if we take care of our 4,000 Minnesota households, it's done. Because when the word gets out that we're providing houses for everybody that's homeless, you know, we're going to continue to have an influx of homeless people. And to answer,
I think what he's trying to tell me is the Iowegians are going to come up here.
Our Texans. And what Representative Doran is saying is right. You know, there's a lot of help being done that we don't even know about. I have a good friend in Corcoran that has a little acreage around her place, and she's got about seven or eight brothers, and a couple of them are alcoholics. One sleeps in a car with a tarp over it outside, and the other's in her basement. So there are people out there that are taking care of homeless other than the, you know, the state or the local municipalities. But it is a problem. We have to do something. I'd, you know, certainly commend you for addressing it. That just scares me when I see that we're going to end something, because it usually just means it's going to get worse.
Commissioner Marks.
Representative Gundry, Representative Lindner. This is a goal that has been articulated by the federal government and President Bush, too, who has said he wants to end long-term or chronic homelessness by the end of this decade. And it is a stretch goal. There's a lot of reasons why it may not happen. However, I guess it's our belief and the governor's belief is that if we set that goal and start aligning resources and the energy of our faith communities and our nonprofit communities and our local governments, we have a really good shot at doing it. Because remember, the way we are defining it, it is for those people who are on the streets or without permanent shelter for a year or more, or have episodic, regular periods of homelessness. And one of the things that we'll be presenting to you later as a part of our effort is really to fix our system so that people don't have to be homeless for a long period of time. We should have the mechanism that homelessness is only a temporary crisis situation, that people who confront that situation get into long-term permanent housing as soon as possible. So as defined, I think we can end this problem.
Thank you. Representative Walz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, you mentioned a little bit ago that there will be criteria or conditions that people have to meet to access this type of housing. What are some of those criteria or conditions?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, what we're going to try to do is really to focus in on the needs of the long-term homeless population. So as we work with nonprofit providers and local governments on their proposals, we are going to make sure that they are targeting for permanent supportive housing those individuals who have been homeless for more than a year, or those that have been homeless several times over the past several years. We're going to have to be flexible and common sense on that, because there's a lot of people who will be on the bubble who will not quite meet the criteria, and we don't want to not serve somebody if they're sincerely at risk of being long-term homeless. But that's the primary criteria, is that they have been long-term homeless or are at serious risk of being long-term homeless.
Okay. Representative Surridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is a really tough question. I don't know. Is that going to cost the most money? And I say that because the people that are chronically homeless are probably the ones that have the most need. And I think this is an interesting dilemma, paradox, and I'm not sure. But I'm sure there's folks out there who, and going back to an instance, when I talked to the people at St. Louis County, is one family they told me about was this husband and wife, and the husband broke his leg and couldn't go back to his job and ran out of amphib, and they couldn't pay their rent, and he was homeless. Now, I'm assuming that person is going to have an easier time using our resources and getting back on his feet with it, he and his family, whereas those that are chemically dependent, have emotional and mental illness, are going to take more resources to help out. So can you address that a little bit as far as resources and maybe help me wrap my head around that?
Representative Gunther, Representative Assertive, that is a really excellent point. The people who are in the long-term homeless category right now who are experiencing that are the most expensive to serve right now. We are spending a lot of money on them right now in emergency rooms, detox facilities, crisis shelters, child protection, and law enforcement. What this effort is about is to reduce their reliance on crisis services, get them into permanent housing so that they are receiving services that allow them to turn their lives around and become more successful and reduce their reliance on those crisis services. And the evidence that we have to date shows that if you get people into permanent housing, their use of emergency rooms, detox, law enforcement starts to reduce. So this effort is a way to spend the money that we are spending on them now much more efficiently and compassionately for them and for taxpayers as well.
Any other questions? Well, since this is just a preliminary hearing, we don't have anything to vote on. We won't ask for testimony from outside. Anybody else? I know Mr. Dahl would probably like to talk, but you'll have your turn when the bill comes up, as well as a couple other bills I think you're already involved in. So with that, we appreciate your input, and thank the committee for their great questions. I also like to point out there's a couple here that I know pay a lot of attention to their fathers, Representative Dorn and Mahoney. They constantly are doing things for them. I hear a lot about it, and it's kind of this is a way we do our own supportive housing, and I appreciate their efforts. You made their lives a little better. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Ellison on House File 479. And we're going to delete all amendment being passed out. Welcome to our committee. Would you give your name for the record? And, Commissioner, you want to make sure you sign in. You want to make sure the Commissioner signs, Ron? Signs the deal?
Sure will.
I got to remember that. You want to move the bill? Representative Sturdish moves House File 479.
For possible inclusion
for
in the
possible inclusion in the bonding bill, right. And with that, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, for the
record. You've got to delete all amendment.
I do, Your Honor.
Ron's passing it out as soon as everybody gets a copy. Representative.
Huh? Hard to hear.
Hard to hear him or me?
Everything.
Okay. I can hear myself real well.
Which voice, Mr. Chair?
We'll see if we can't turn up the volume.
Wait till these phones
work. Yeah. That'll work too.
Thank you. Can I work?
Okay, I think the volume has gone down. Representative Sertich.
I'd like to move the delete all amendment, H479DE1.
Okay, all in favor of approving the delete all amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill is the way you want it, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Keith Ellison. I represent House District 58B. I'd like to introduce our first testifier, Minneapolis City Councilperson Natalie Johnson Lee. The area that I'm going to be speaking with you about today is in the heart of both of our districts, and so I look forward to you hearing from Councilmember Lee. We also have Mr. Darrell Washington from the City of Minneapolis, who can explain the project in great detail. And we also have a neighborhood organizer, actually a person who's the head of our community-based organization, Ms. Sherry Pugh, who is in the audience and hopefully will be able to come forward to be heard. Members, thank you for giving us an opportunity to be heard on this bill. This is a very important project, I think, for the entire state, but it will have an impact in North Minneapolis. Heritage Park is the new name of this housing development. Heritage Park is the site of where 900 new housing units will come in. It's the former site of Sumner Olson Projects. We used to call it the Projects. And at that site, there were about 770 housing units, all of which were public housing units. With this new development, we're going to bring housing units to people in Minneapolis and in other areas. But these will go back on the housing rolls. There'll be property taxes assessed on the homes that are there. There will be people there who can live and pay taxes and contribute to our community. As I said, prior to the housing development, all the housing was public. was public housing. There was no tax, property tax base. There was concentrated poverty. I would note just historically that this area, what we now know as Heritage Park, was formerly an area where public housing was residents lived in very isolated circumstances. Actually, you couldn't even drive through this area. It was sort of walled off, and the streets were configured in such a way that the neighborhood residents were isolated. They were concentrated in poverty, and you had just about every social problem that you could name. And so this housing development will bring significant improvement of the lives of the residents and therefore our community and our state. This housing development came to us because over the course of literally decades, two things were going on. One was racialized steering. People of color, African Americans in particular, were routed only to this housing project. And also, you had this concentration of low-income poverty people. In 1995, there was a consent decree between the parties, and the plaintiffs were the NAACP and public and legal aid, and the defendants were HUD, the Metropolitan Council, City of Minneapolis, and Minneapolis Public Housing Authority. And they all agreed that this historical situation did exist, was problematic, and needed to change. And so the party set about a plan to deconcentrate poverty and give people housing choice. Also, historically, the housing was on soil that caused serious drainage problems, water, insects, things like that. And so this new project, which is on 140 acres of land in the heart of Minneapolis, represents a serious step forward. This bonding request is for $9.62 million in bonding help, and what we're asking for is a reconfiguration of Floyd B. Olson Highway, $5.6 million, Van White Memorial Boulevard, $2.125 million, and the final phase of residential and street work. Olson Memorial Highway needs to be made more environmentally friendly. It's a very high moving thoroughfare, and we need to make sure that public transportation, bicyclists, walkers, people like that, will be safe as they walk around the neighborhood. Van White Drive actually is important because I spoke about the isolation of Heritage Park in over the years, and what you would see is that you really could not go through. But Van White Memorial Drive will actually be a connector, so that from this housing development, you can get anywhere in the city, which is definitely a new step forward. Will give people access to work, shopping, things like that, something that they did not have before. And then finally, there's more. We need to improve residential street and sewer work for the housing that's there. I just want to note that this project has a significant statewide impact, in that it does improve our situation in terms of poverty mitigation. It improves housing availability, tax base stabilization, and also it complies with the terms of the Holman, which is the lawsuit I mentioned before, consent decree, in that it is consistent with elimination of concentration of poverty and providing more opportunity. And also it meets the goals of the Federal Empowerment Zone. Let me say that Minnesotans come to each other's aid when they need it. I was happy to see that this is somewhat in the nature of the job zone bill that was passed last year. Rural Minnesota needed economic development, and now urban Minnesota needs some too, and we're hoping we can gain your support.
Thank you very much. Do you want to go to your testifier next?
I would. Let me reintroduce Councilmember Natalie Johnson Lee.
Welcome to our committee, Councilman Lee. Would you please give your name for the record so 20 years from now we can fill out the tape and hear what you had to say?
Great. My name is Natalie Johnson Lee. I am the council member for the 5th Ward of the City of Minneapolis. Thank you for having me here to testify in front of you today. Actually, Mr. Ellison took most of my talking points, so I'm going to have to redirect. What I will do is I'll bring you briefly up to date as to what has taken place so far. So far, there are 232 units of rental units that have been built to date. And about three-fourths of those are occupied. The other one-fourth are in the process of being occupied. That development consists of market rate, affordable housing, and also public housing. We also in the process of doing, preparing to build a 100 elderly housing unit in the area, and we just signed a contract for the for sale properties to go in there. So before you had 770 units, all 100% public housing, and now you're going to have a mixed income development with for sale housing as well as rental housing in the various stages of 60% below market area median income, public housing again, and then market rate when it's all said and done. This particular project is important to go back to one of the things that Representative Ellison talked about when he talked about access and people having the opportunity and not being so concentrated and isolated. If you ever went in that area, it was you just kind of drove by. You did not go in, and many other folks really didn't go out much out of the area. There was no place for them to go. The North-South Connector begins to connect this new community or this new area in the existing North community. It gives us access to many resources that we didn't have before. It's right next to 94. Do you guys know the area where it's located? It's right on.
I have one. Is this where the old projects used to be?
Yep. That's where
I remember delivering groceries in the projects from Casey's Grocery Store in Bass Lake Road, so I'm familiar with.
Yeah, right off of 94, Highway 55, Lindale. If you've been in Minneapolis or North Minneapolis, you may be familiar with that. But there's been a tremendous amount of work done already, and we have a little ways to go. And so that's why we're coming to you for your assistance so that we can complete this project and show people that mixed income developments do work. You can take property that people had written off and create a tax base for the city and also for the state. So, and also create a whole new constituency of voters that are involved in the political process. So that's also an exciting thing with mixed income levels. So that's pretty much besides any specific detail that I have to say.
Mr. Chair, if I may,
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Mr. Darrell Washington forward to give more detailed explanation.
Sure. Representative Clark, I think, has a question first.
Yes, it's for the council member, so it's nice to have you here. I just wanted to ask you a question, and maybe this is for my colleague, Representative Ellison, too. The amendment deletes the other part of the original bonding proposal that included a number of things that I know the city had originally supported in addition to Heritage Park, which I think is excellent and which will, I hope, get fully funded in this committee. I'm just wondering about the other parts that are deleted, and specifically the parts that happen to be in my district, both in the Midtown Greenway and in the Sears building. And I know the city has been talking with some of us about that. I actually, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to say I missed my own city's briefing on this. I was out with my father who was ill in another part of the country. So could you just, and I see you have somebody from the city to bring up, but either I'd be glad to hear from you, Councilmember Lee, or from the city. Just where are we with that proposal?
You can pull up another chair, Council, if you'd like. Just grab one right from there. There are a lot of chairs here.
Mr. Chair, let me introduce Bill Barnhart from the City of Minneapolis.
Welcome to the committee. Would you please give us your name for the record?
Mr. Chair, Bill Barnhart, City of Minneapolis, Intergovernmental Relations, Representative Clark. Last year we had all of those in one bill. This year we are submitting them as individual projects. In fact, the Health Careers Institute will be submitted as a project, and the now called University Research Park will be submitted as a freestanding project, as this one has turned into. So the answer is all three of them are coming forward under individual jackets. This particular one, the route taken was the using last year's bill, but deleting it, so it turned into this only.
Mm-hmm. That's fine, Mr. Chair. I presume we'll get a chance to hear those.
We'll look forward to it.
Okay, thank you. I just want to say I think this is a great project, and I hope that we will fully fund it in this committee.
Any other members have any questions? I have one. Counselor, where on the priority list of Minneapolis City Council is this project? This on the top?
Yeah, it's on
middle?
The top. No,
on
it's
bottom.
On the top. No, it's the top priority.
Top priority. Yeah. Thank you very much. It's good. It's good for us to know we want to pay attention to what Minneapolis wants to do. And
I appreciate
Paul.
That.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Okay. I was just going to ask, are there new roads going in with this? Is that what part of this is?
Representative Allison.
The answer is yeah. There's reconfigured roads, and the roads are actually changed in order to make the area more accessible to the rest of the city.
And so if I'm looking at your map, it's the blue area that's going to be the new roads, or...
Mr. Chairman, let me introduce Mr. Darrell Washington from the city. He's our technical expert. He can address Representative Mahoney better than I can.
Mr. Washington, welcome to our committee. Would you give your name for the record?
Darrell Washington, City of Minneapolis.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, apologies.
Mahoney.
The blue road you see there is called Vanden White Memorial Boulevard. It is a road that will be taking areas from the north down to the south. In the city of Minneapolis, there's currently one road to get to the north side, which is Lindell Avenue, which drives along 94. As you can see, when we talk about isolation, it is serious isolation. There was only one, and many of you know where the farmer's market is, and that is the only roadway to get up to the north side. What this does is that... people from the south to the north. It brings residents throughout the region up to the north side. And it is important that this type of a roadway is configured. In addition, the same soils that were built with the housing, this is where those roads are built as well. So when we come to you and ask for bonding dollars, it is really to reconfigure the soils, reconfigure the what was there before. Previously, what was there before were oil refineries, were chemical companies, were soils that no one else wanted to be on. This is where you put soils and dirt in the early 1900s where you didn't want dirt. This is the place in the Bassett Creek area, and it's something that we find every single day that we need to clean up and we need to dispose of. So it's that help, that, and it's a statewide significance that we need to help with that, with those types of problems.
Representative Mahoney.
So the blue area on the map is a new road. It's interesting, I didn't realize that you were planning on using that for your environmental remediation on brownfields. That's a great idea. It's the way to do it. I know we're doing that over in the Phelan Corridor. That's it's a good way to encapsulate polluted land and get and not have to use the money to burn it to get rid of all the pollutants. So that's not a bad idea. Glad I asked that particular question, and your answer was a little bit more than I was looking for, but I appreciate that.
Any other questions? Representative Linder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking at some notes we have here from the website for the City of Minneapolis, and it says that part of this project is to meet the 2004 court-ordered deadline for completion of 200 units. Is that correct?
Mr. Washington.
Mr. Chair, Representative Linder. That is correct. Currently, there is a stipulation that says that we will need to meet 200 public housing units by October 2004. That is in the process of being changed at this present time to by the end of December 2005. At the present time, it states 2004, and within a week, we'll be going back to Judge Rosenbaum to extend that to December 31, 2005.
Representative Linder.
Mr. Chair, I thought Ms. Lee said that there had already been 232 new units there and only and three-fourths of them occupied. So wouldn't that satisfy the court order?
Mr. Washington.
Mr. Chair, units. Representative Linder, 200 units of public housing is to be built throughout the development. They have already been built 232 apartments, and within those apartments, 105 of them are public housing. One of the problems that presented previously to this development was that all of the public housing was concentrated in one area. One of the most important parts of this decree between HUD and the state and other Met Council and others was basically saying that we will not mix, or we will not congregate public housing units into one building or one wing of a building or anything. You will not be able to tell that there's a public housing unit versus a market rate unit next door. They will look absolutely the same. So when you walk by or drive by someone paying $1,000 a month, it would be somewhere next to someone paying $200 or $300 a month.
And one more, Linder. Chair, if you'll allow me. I'm kind of familiar with this area because I used to go to church just north of there on Broadway and Fremont. And I've gone this direction many a times, and I was in real estate in the 80s, and so I've actually been into this project, helping people, you know, find homes. And actually, a lot of nice people lived in that those units and had automobiles and went out to, I call it Highway 55, but I guess Olson Memorial Parkway, you know, and catch the bus. So I think they would be disappointed if somebody said that they were confined there and never got to go anywhere because they moved all over the place, you know, as they wanted to. They were free to do that. I just out of curiosity, I just wonder what happened to all the thousands of people that were there that were living in those affordable homes what happened to them? Where did they go?
Mr. Washington.
Mr. Chair, Representative Linder, wonderful thing happened. They were able to move to other parts of the region, other parts of the state. They decided that they would like to move to Centerville. They would like to go to Chaska. They would like to go in other places of the state. One of the things that this allowed was that it allowed individuals not to be confined to one area, but allowed to be moved to another areas. And so the Public Housing Authority and the state, Met Council, provided dollars and provided resource, and majority of it came from HUD, the federal HUD, to allow those residents to move to other areas, and they were relocated to other areas, which was a centerpiece, one of the centerpieces of this consent decree. And we are probably the only state and the only region in this country that has done it successfully.
They also return.
Some of them have the ability to return to this area as well.
Representative Ellison.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I wanted to note that a significant number of people did return to live in what is now Heritage Park. So, in reference to Representative Linder's question, some you opted to move out, exercise housing choice. Many did come back, and I'd note that this housing development is literally within four blocks of my own home, where I live and raise my family, and for the last 15 years. And I am very pleased to hear the praise Representative Linder has for them. There are many nice people who live there, so I want to thank you for pointing that out. I would note that, yes, true, some people could get on the bus. Some people did have automobiles, but a very, very significant number of people did not. And so there was a degree of isolation that I think that it's important for the committee to understand that two things can be true at the same time. There were people who had mobility, as Representative Linder points out. He's correct about that. Not everybody was confined all the time, but the level of mobility and access was very low compared to other parts of our state. So I just wanted to make that point clear.
I know for a fact that a lot of them didn't have cars because every Tuesday and Thursday from Casey's grocery store I deliver groceries.
you were driving. Yeah.
Any other questions? With that, we renew Representative Sertich's motion to pass this bill as amended and put it in our omnibus, projected omnibus. How did you put that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that everything was from now Chief of Staff Commissioner McElroy.
Oh, something else, isn't it?
Yeah, passed for possible inclusion into our bonding bill.
There you go, possible inclusion in our bonding bill.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
members of the committee, I just wanted to point out to the members of the committee that Sherry Pugh did come down today. Ms. Pugh, could you rise just to let the committee look at you there?
You don't have
thank you. Ms. Pugh is she did come prepared with some remarks, which we can submit via writing.
Very well.
And but I just want to let everybody know that she's in full support of this project, that she does run the local community development agency, and so that, and our partners in the Heritage Park.
She was here to answer the tough question.
Yeah. But so we do want to just recognize her and thank her for coming down.
I guess we don't have to pass a motion. We will include this in our omnibus
consideration
for omnibus bonding proposal.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for
thank
being
you,
here. I got to type that out. You know, a good committee administrator had that done, don't you think?
The first day.
Okay. With that, with no other business to come before committee, we have a meeting tomorrow. We have several other bills. And with that, we'll adjourn this meeting.